Hey everyone, welcome to a new edition of the Woj Pod. My guest in our New York studio today, the great Jack McCallum, Naismith Hall of Fame sports writer, New York Times best-selling author, whose newest book has just been released, Golden Days, West Lakers, Steph's Warriors, and the California Dreamers Who Reinvented Basketball. Jack and I discuss all the key characters in his new book, Kevin Durant, Steph Curry, Jerry West, those great Laker teams of the early 70s, and this current burgeoning Warriors dynasty. We talk more about his career covering the NBA as Jack came of age at Sports Illustrated as the NBA was coming of age in the 80s and early 90s. A great visit with Jack McCallum. Let's get to it. Here in studio with Jack McCallum, a basketball Hall of Famer, one of the all-time great magazine writers in any genre, but certainly at the very top covering the NBA, which is what he's been most known for through three decades at SI, and a best-selling author who has a new book out. It's called The Golden Days, West Lakers, Steph's Warriors, and the California Dreamers Who Reinvented Basketball. Jack, welcome in.
Thanks for having me, Woj. Looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it. There's a lot of places I want to go with you today on this, but I want to start with the book. Golden Days is now out. You can get it at your favorite bookstore. You can get it online. I know you just taped your audio version, too, which probably will be coming out.
Yes, you have to hear me do a Kendrick Lamar rap. That'll be the highlight of the audio book. It only took me about 30 hours to complete it. So, Jack,
your resume of books, Dream Team, 7 Seconds or Less, you know, most notably, this book, Golden Days, which ties together the 70s Lakers of Jerry West and Elgin Baylor and Wilt into this modern-day Golden State Warriors dynasty that Jerry West had a connection to as an executive. How did this idea come about to – you didn't write a book about the 70s Lakers. It's not a book just about this great Warriors era. How did you decide to try to tell this story through both teams?
I can't exactly take full credit for it. I was listening to a Doors album one night, believe it or not. It was an LA woman came on. We were sort of having an email exchange about what's one of your favorite, a group that you really didn't hate, but they have one great song. To me, it was LA Woman by the Doors. You know, otherwise Jim Morrison was a kind of a drunken buffoon, as the Philip Seymour Hoffman character says. I became fascinated by this team. It was 1971-72. It was the first year I started working as a sports writer. Lots of things going on. The Vietnam War was still going on. My idea was to kind of do a book about that team, bring in sort of some of the outside world. When I proposed it to Ballantine Books, a Random House division where I had done Dream Team, the Warriors at that time were on their winning streak. And he said, well, your book's, you know, it sounds good, but it sounds a little old. Is there a way to incorporate, you know, a new element? And I said, well, Jerry West happens to be the centerpiece of the 71-72 team and was an important person on the formation of this Warriors team that was kind of transforming the NBA. So it seemed a pretty good idea to kind of link the two teams through the Jerry West, who's basically came into the league in 1960, and as a major factor in the league, has never really left. You know, he's kind of been with us for, 55 years now, since 1960. So that was the original idea, to try to put them together. A lot of things happened in there. The Warriors' streak continued, but they lost the championship. Then they got Kevin Durant, you know, so that kind of became the story. So it wasn't until the day after the finals, I called up my editor, the 2017 finals, when they won in 5 games. And I called up the editor and said, okay, now I see it. I can alternate chapters between the old Lakers and the new Warriors. And hopefully that's what I did, you know, somewhat successfully.
They did. And I have not finished the book yet, but what I've read is tremendous. Everything Jack has done in his career. Unfinished Business, which he wrote about the sort of the back end of that Celtic dynasty in the 80s with Bird, McHale, Paris, that group was like one of the first books that made me want to be a sports writer, I grew up with those teams as a kid, and you just didn't know much about them. It wasn't in this day and age, everybody is covered and everybody has access to the information. It's harder to write a book about something in this modern era, isn't it, Jack, than when you thought back, sort of the open field you had back when you wrote about whether it was the Celtic team, even the 7 Seconds or Less book on Mike D'Antoni and the Suns. I would imagine this Warriors team who is covered, who is scrutinized and is very open, accessible, to feel like, what can I give people that's new that they haven't read about already or feel like isn't fresh?
Yeah, it's kind of a dichotomy these days. You know the teams. You think you know them because they're so active, as you say, the way they're covered. Secondly, their own social media platforms, their own way of introducing themselves into the culture. So you feel like you know them, but you don't exactly know them. You know the surface part of them. The Warriors, a little plug for Raymond Ritter. I mean, he's a public relations guy for the Warriors. The greatest guy in the world. Yeah, you want 15 minutes with Kevin. You want 15 minutes with Steph. But to get really inside of him is hard, the way I was able to do with 7 Seconds or Less, because Mike D'Antoni just kind of opened the door. The Celtics book was back in 1991. I rode on the bus with the Celtics. Now you'd have to have a pass, from Washington to get on a bus with somebody. So it's kind of different. In a strange way, this book, I was able to burrow more into the 71-72 Lakers team, because after a while, people have perspective on looking back on things. And the Warriors right now, I kind of chronicled them, you know, what had happened to them the last 1 or 2 years. But I didn't want people to think it's not exactly 7 Seconds or Less. It's kind of an excavation of two teams and two eras of basketball. And well, that was one of the most interesting things to me, the way things were done, you know, the travel and the way the owners and the way the players reacted with the public in 71-72 as opposed to the way they do it now.
And to me, and I'm curious, as the author of it, to me, that Laker team in that era, that early 70s Laker team, to me is a far more interesting or maybe complex story, because that group had so much angst. They had lost to the Celtics a lot. Jerry West, Elgin Baylor, you know, Wilt comes in and they become this, you know, dominant force. This Warrior team, yeah, they lost once to Cleveland in the finals, but they're certainly built to keep winning for a long time. There's nothing that makes them think that that's not going to happen. But that Laker team just went through so much more together.
The Laker team, Jerry came into the league in 1960. Elgin Baylor by then was in his third season when Jerry came in. He was probably the first black player who was specifically drafted to be a star. You know, Bill Russell was a star by then, but he was more or less a complimentary player. You know, and I'm not saying anything about Russell's greatness, but he was a rebounder, shot blocker. Elgin was a star. But that team, as you said, what they went through in the 60s, they lost six finals to the Celtics. Six. And they never won. You know, it's not like they went 2-6. They went 0-6. Then they get to 1970, they get to the finals because the Knicks beat out the Celtics, and they lose to the Knicks. The next year, they lose to the Milwaukee Bucks of Kareem and Oscar in the conference finals. Milwaukee was in the West then. Jerry West is 0-8. The logo is 0-8 going into the 71-72 finals. And in a couple of those years, the Lakers were supposedly favored. They could not beat Bill Russell. They just couldn't get past the Celtics. So part of the story of the 71-72 season is 33 straight wins and a championship, but what they overcame to get there and their reputation as losers, you know, cannot be. Anybody who was ever proclaimed a loser, that Laker team throughout the 1960s, they were one of the ultimate losers when they got to the big show.
Your relationship with Jerry West, you've known him as a player. You've known him, I think you knew him a little bit as a coach for a brief time.
Yeah, probably not quite. I'm not quite that old. I mean, I met him early on in his the GM Jim, tenure, the early late 70s, early 80s, you know.
Jerry, at 80 years old now, he was with Golden State in a consultant's role. He's got a similar consultant's role with the Clippers now. And he was in studio here last year. And I don't know, what's always remarkable to me about him is the intensity at 80 with which he still feels everything.
Yeah, it's Peter Guber, one of the new owners of the Warriors, proclaimed this thing about himself. That he said, you know, I have a lot of aliveness. And that's sort of Jerry. Jerry kind of, I mean, some of it is, a lot of it is negative. I mean, Jerry beats himself up, you know, a little bit too much. Bob Myers, the Warriors GM, kind of psychoanalyzed him while I was doing the book. It said anything about anybody else that he feels, he kind of filters through himself. And it all comes out as this sort of negative turn of things. But Jerry, his desire to still stay contemporary, to still stay up on the game, still look at scouting reports. And one of the things I appreciated the most about him was his utter refusal to denigrate today's game. That he doesn't look at LeBron James like so many people and go, oh, you know, back then we would have pushed him to his left and he would have never scored. You know, he says, no, this guy is a great player. Steph Curry throws the ball away too much, but he's a great player. You know, Jerry always relates as a player, and that was part of his success with the Warriors. He doesn't come in and sound like, you know, back in my day we did it this way. He comes in and says, okay, this is the way we approached it in my day, but right now you could do this a little better. And everybody I talked to on the Warriors from, you know, Curry on down, all said that about Wes. They all found in a conversation with him something that he knew about their game that could relate. And, you know, when you get to be that age and not always refer back on, well, back in my day, if you can do that, that takes a pretty extraordinary person. I always admired that about Jerry. He didn't have that old get off my lawn type of thing that so many former players do.
Yeah, and when he was in here last year on the podcast, and we talking about free agency, and, you know, he still carries a lot of frustration about a lot of things sometimes, and that's a great deal of what's driven him to be great, because it fuels him. It's always fueled him. But he said to me, hey, I could have imagined myself with the Celtics, that I wish I had free agency, that I could have gone out and gotten my market value. And I absolutely would have left L.A. to go to Boston or New York. He said, I loved playing here. I loved New York. Some guys from that area, you hear more and more of the super teams, well, we didn't do that, or we wouldn't have done it, and we wouldn't have done what Durant did, or even what LeBron did with going to Miami with Bosch and joining Wade. But Jerry's he's certainly very contemporary in that thinking.
Yeah, and Jerry played under, if we can use that term, under a very strange owner named Jack Kent Cook, who's a big part of the book, who took over the Lakers in the mid-60s. Millionaire, you know, I guess we could call him a genius for harnessing talent and certainly some of his business deals. But, you know, he wouldn't, Bill Boertke, who, you know, who's still with the Lakers and was with them as a scout back then, you know, he begged him to buy a new projector. You know, Jack Kent Cook wouldn't buy a new projector for the Lakers. Bill used to hold the spool of the projector together with a pencil, because that's how cheap Jack Kent Cook was. Jerry had many money battles. And part of what's gone on, part of what you allude to, was his willingness to talk about, hey, I would have switched teams in free agency. I do think Jerry had a little bit of regret for not speaking out a little more back then. It's one of the things that, you know, he was an unbelievable leader of the league. I mean, people love Jerry West. One of the things his son Johnny told me was, when I was a kid, the number of people that came up to me and said, you know, I was a Celtics fan, but I loved your dad. You know, and that's really unusual. And Jerry was in that position of real leadership and respect around the league, and I think he does regret not speaking out a little more in player issues. I mean, the guy against whose he's eternally measured, Oscar Robertson, yeah, Oscar's not as popular. He's a little more brittle. He's a little harder to talk to. He's a little bit more of a get-off-my-lawn guy. At the same time, Oscar was a very, very, very important person in the labor struggles of this league, the proposed boycott of the 64 All-Star game, the suit against the NBA. I think Jerry, particularly since he's been around the Warriors, who are outspoken social activists, I think Jerry has a little bit of regret that he didn't do it more back then, and that's part of his motivation for speaking out now.
The star power on the Warrior team, I mean, there was such incredible star power on that Laker team. West, Baylor, Wilt Chamberlain. I mean, three of the seminal figures in the history of the league. And we're going to look back at Golden State and probably, you know, certainly of this era of Durant, Curry, Klay Thompson, Draymond Green. The dynamic of that group, they haven't been together as long and they haven't gone through what that other group went through, but Durant entering that team changed everything in the league. Kevin Durant going to Golden State, it transformed the NBA. I mean, LeBron going to Miami did one thing. I think LeBron going to Miami made it possible for Kevin to say, I can do this. And even then, I mean, LeBron was going to a lottery team. Kevin Durant was going to what we thought maybe was the greatest regular season team in history, right? So what did you learn about Kevin in the year? And even you reported the book out over time and were around there and you spent time with him. And then, like, you got done writing the book. And then Kevin had a summer where you saw him transform himself in new ways. Like, what did you learn about him?
I would say, and I just wrote about this on my website, to me, when I was dealing with it, was Durant came into the league and, you know, this is Kevin's not a rookie anymore. I mean, Kevin's that on the court, he evolved into, you know, I referred to him as kind of a Steph as a revolutionary player and Kevin as an evolutionary player. I mean, Kevin took all the things you are as a basketball player that you want: shooting, passing, dribbling, rebounding, defense, court sense, shooting in the clutch. It's like you took this guy and built almost the perfect player because he's 7 feet tall. But he still seems slightly to me to be like a work in progress dealing with being Kevin Durant, you know, that he still can't quite figure out how to do it, how to, you know, tell Russ, why don't you just go, you know, screw yourself. I left. Let's move on. He seems a little bit unable to do that in a way that Steph, who still looks like a boyish kid, came into the league, you know, a couple years after Kevin, gets a lot of criticism himself for people can't understand why he got this good this quickly, but seems almost more sure of himself, that almost this is what I am, and if you don't like it, you know, that's the way to go. I'm this little guy that's going to dribble three and shoot threes. You don't like it? That's tough. That Kevin's still a little bit more of a feeling out process. And to me, you know, when I covered the league, it was always somebody's team. You know, the 80s were – it had to be Larry's team. When push comes to shove, it was Larry's team. In the 90s – I'm sorry, the 80s also, yeah, they had Kareem, but it was Magic's team. It was Michael's team. It was Isaiah's team, you know, and it was Steph's team when they won in 2015. Now Kevin comes along, and whose team is it? I mean, Kevin, to me, is a more impactful player. But as I said, Steph, the way what he did to change the game with his long distance shooting is more of a revolutionary player. And I think the only thing beside injuries, obviously, that could trip them up is figuring out whose team it is. Because maybe I'm coming from a 1980s standpoint of it, but to me, it's always got to be somebody's team. You know, it was when Shaq and Kobe were really interesting because that's kind of comparable, that turn-of-the-century team that won three. To me, it was Shaq's team first, and then it kind of became Kobe's, and then they kind of couldn't figure it out, mm-hmm. and that's when they broke up. And I'm not saying that's going to happen with these two guys. They have great management. They have great coaching. They make a lot of money. You know, they're smart, but that's something we've got to look out for.
I think there's two players in this era who deserve credit for this, and I think it's Dwayne Wade and Steph Curry. Because both of them allowed, who welcomed a player from the outside to come in, a great player, an MVP level talent, an MVP, Hall of Fame guy, to come in and understand that Dwayne Wade knew, like, this will become LeBron's team in Miami. And it did, because LeBron's LeBron. And Wade allowed that to happen in Miami and benefited with the two championships and four straight trips to the finals. And then Steph being fully open to this, and I think Steph understanding enough himself that he carried too big of a load. Like, that season he had was so incredible. And I think Steve Kerr made a great analogy. He's always, there's no one's better with metaphors than Steve. He sees it in a way. And when last year people said, geez, Steph's not really having, what's wrong with Steph? And it's like, I think the example he used was, you know, Ted Williams hit 406 one year. Like, the next year when he hit 390 or 385, did anyone say, what's wrong with Ted? Like, you were never going to, you just maybe were never going to replicate that. But I think Steph knew that enough. And when Draymond was recruiting Kevin, I know that was part of the pitch, was we need you. We do need to take the burden off of Steph. Now, the rest of the league can roll its eyes at that and go, yeah, we wish we had these problems. But they found a way to make that work in that group that's allowed it to have staying power.
Yeah, well, first of all, it's a great point about Wade. I sometimes forget about him. Dwayne Wade, as clearly as anybody beside Jordan, won a championship himself for them. 2006 finals, Dwayne Wade won that championship. They don't win a game without that guy.
Down 2-0, he was the dominant player. Oh, Shaq was there. Now, Shaq took some pressure off of him. He couldn't have won it without him. But you're right. That was Wade's title. It wasn't like he had done it. He had already done it. And that's hard to let a guy in after. Or it, not hard to let him in, but hard to just give up that mantle.
Yeah, exactly. And by several years later, he as you said, he understood it was Steph not only had the adjustment of a great player coming in. You know, Steph has the ball. I mean, Steph's the one running the offense. And one of the things I mentioned in the book, and not exactly a secret, was that the Warriors, you know, they had a great season even from the beginning. However, there was some stumbles there. And the Christmas Day game in Cleveland, when they looked all of a sudden, they didn't score a point in the final 3 minutes or something. Cleveland came back to win in Cleveland. But it still looked like, oh, man, these guys are all messed up. They had a little getting together back then that Steph had to kind of go back and be who he was. And then it still took some shuffling. Then Kevin Durant goes. Steph was in a terrible slump right around the time, right before Kevin Durant went down with the knee injury. Kevin goes down in Washington. He misses, I think, the next 19 games. Curry plays, if you were to judge those games, you know, Westbrook and Harden notwithstanding, you know, Steph is the MVP of the league. I mean, he was unbelievable during that time. They didn't lose, you know, without Kevin Durant. Now they go into the finals. You know, Steph was great in one of them, although Iguodala was the MVP. How are you going to play this? You know, is it going to be my team or is it going to be KD's team? And they did this so smoothly, and KD was great, absolutely deserved to be the finals MVP. If he wasn't, it probably would have been LeBron. But a lot of that had to do with Steph understanding, you know, what's going to happen. And going forward, to use the cliche of the day, it's going to be very interesting to see if that can keep evolving, you know, to see if they can still continue to figure that out. And I have, you know, with a coach like Steve Kerr and two smart basketball guys, there's nothing to believe they wouldn't. But it's just something to look for to see whose team it is.
Hey, Hoops fans, basketball season is back, and you know what that means. It's time to put your basketball knowledge to the test with one-day fantasy basketball at DraftKings.com. With one-day fantasy basketball at DraftKings, you can be a part of the action every night. With DraftKings, there are so many ways to play. Choose between public contests with big cash prizes or private contests where you can take on your friends. DraftKings even has beginner and casual contests where you'll play against people of similar skill level. Drafting your team is simple. Just select 8 players and stay under the $50,000 salary cap. Earn points for scoring, assists, blocks, rebounds, and more. The best part is you get to draft a new team every day without any commitment. There's no better way to turn your love of basketball into cash tonight. Hurry to DraftKings.com now and use the code WOJ to play free with your first deposit for your share of $10,000 in total prizes tonight. That's code WOJ, W-O-J, to play for free with your first deposit only at DraftKings, the game inside the game. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for more details. Support for the Woj Pod comes from Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. They understand that home plays a big role in your life and family. That's why they created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's simple, allowing you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th, with Rocket Mortgage, you get a transparent online process that gives you the confidence to make an informed decision. It's convenient. Our trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. And in addition to getting a real mortgage approval in minutes, you can even adjust the rate and length of your loan in real time and make sure you're getting the right solution for you. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/woj. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states, NMLSconsumerAccess.org, number 3030.
Jack, when you did 7 seconds or less on the D'Antoni Suns, at that time, Mike D'Antoni and Steve Kerr, there was a lot of, I don't know if acrimony is the right word, but tension between them in different ways. How did you see from your time with them, from Steve Kerr as the executive and then Steve Kerr, the coach in Golden State, even the Kerr you knew as a player, what's the evolution you've seen in him?
Well, first of all, Steve and Mike, and you know both of them, and I know both of them very well. Two of the greatest guys in the world. You could bring them into this room. You wouldn't find two more pleasant guys to talk to. They're both humorous. They're both, but inside of both of them is kind of this incredible competitive fire. And when Steve was GM over Mike in Phoenix, you know, the Suns are one of those teams like Sacramento early in the 2000s, the greatest, the best team never to win a finals. They knew they had the best team. They knew they had the material. They knew they should be beating the Spurs. But they didn't. And that caused a lot of pressure between them. And there's one thing about Mike D'Antoni, whether Mike hears this or not, you know, Mike, the more you tell Mike he can't do something, the more you tell Mike that your offense isn't going to work, you need more defense. No, the more Mike is going to tell you he doesn't. And Steve was in a position then of being the general manager to offer slight, you know, whether the criticisms were slight or not. And Mike really reacted, more strongly. I almost couldn't believe it when there was tension between them, because if you would put two guys you'd want to go out to dinner with, two of them would be Steve Kerr and Mike D'Antoni. But they were just in that position where they were kind of butting heads. And you knew when Steve got it, you didn't know whether you never know whether somebody can be a coach. I mean, you just don't know it. One of the things I appreciated about Steve was figuring out how he was going to play, because Steve played on a team. He played his games with Michael, which was not a fast-breaking team, which was kind of a half-court team with a system. Then he goes to the Spurs, system there. I mean, the Spurs weren't stodgy, but they ran a system. And now Steve is the coach, and I've never coached an NBA team, nor have you, but I don't think you have.
Only on the internet.
Oh, yeah, on the internet. Yeah. It's very, to figure out how you're going to play. Mike D'Antoni knew how he was going to play when he got, because that's how, what he saw in Italy. And he came into the NBA, and it kind of failed a little bit in Denver. Mm. And Mike always says, I wanted to play that way. Then I got scared. And, they told me I couldn't play that way. Mike knew how he was going to play. When Steve got the job, he had to figure out how he was going to play. And in the beginning, as I understand it, he was a little bit cautious. And one of the things Steve Kerr does is hire Alvin Gentry, who's kind of Mike's guy, and Mike's, you know, the guy that will proselytize about Mike's offense more than Mike will. And that's the kind of guy Steve Kerr was. He has a little bit of bad blood with D'Antoni, although they figured it out. They hashed it all out. And he brings in Alvin and said, hey, what did Mike do? What does Mike do on his off the ball, on screen and rolls over here? What are the weak side guys doing? What's Mike doing? How does he run? How does he get a three-point shot off the half-court offense? That was Steve Kerr's great triumph, is figuring out that I'm not going to play like the Chicago Bulls did, and I'm not going to play exactly like the Spurs. I may take things from Phil. I may take things from Pop. But I'm going to play the way our material has to play. And you can say, well, any idiot's going to let Steph Kerr shoot threes and let Clay shoot threes. You know, anybody's going to do that. But you still have to evolve into that as a coach. And with Steve's intelligence, I don't think it's any surprise that he's become a successful coach. And to me, it's great to see these two guys, Mike D'Antoni and Steve Kerr, who did have some bad blood when they were both with Phoenix. It's great to see them now on kind of the cusp of this revolution. And they're going to be battling this year. There's some tense games when Mike goes up against Steve, no doubt about it.
I mean, imagine that. And I think even when Steve was the GM in Phoenix, he was not shy about saying coaching intrigued him and that he imagined he was never going to necessarily be long for the front office, that coaching did appeal to him. And we know how close he came to taking that Knicks job, really close. And if Phil offers him the money that he wanted from the beginning, essentially what he ended up giving Derek Fisher, Steve probably goes to the Knicks. Like, that thing was being held up for a while. Steve was having second thoughts, but the Knicks were making it easy by not quite guaranteeing the number of years on the deal and some of those things. And it gave Steve sort of the time to rethink this, start looking at that Warriors thing and go, maybe I'd rather go there.
I'm trying to think of Steve Kerr's back to the trouble that he had with the spinal fluid leakage after his off-season surgery. I'm trying to think of what that pain would be like if he were coaching, if he were coaching the Knicks, because it wasn't, you know, personnel-wise, obviously. He got to the Warriors, and, you know, I have a part in the book when I talk about the word culture. You know, we kind of overuse, you know, this is Spurs culture, and, you know, there's a definite Warriors culture. We play with joy and we play with democracy. And, you know, Steve has fit right into that. It seems like the perfect fit. And I just don't know. It's just harder to incorporate some of that thing, not just because of the Knicks record or the personnel or, you know, Carmelo or whatever. It's just harder to do that here in New York City than it is in Golden State.
The Warriors thing, everybody wants. How do we replicate it? You can't replicate it. I don't think there's been a team people have tried to replicate more than the Spurs. They were the model for how you run your organization. And you saw a lot of Spurs executives, some coaches, certainly some coaches around the league, but front office executives who moved on from there and took over teams and tried to, you know, Tim Duncan was Tim Duncan and Kawhi Leonard is Kawhi Leonard. And, but the Warriors thing, you talk about the joy. Well, there is great joy when you're winning every night and you have the best players and unbelievable talent. That doesn't mean Steve's job is easy. Anybody in the league would want it. But of course, there's challenges to it. Draymond Green is a challenge every day as a coach, but all of it's a challenge. He's also a blessing as a coach to have him. And Steve has, and you talk about it in the book, Steve had to learn to manage his relationship with Draymond, use that ferocity that Draymond has that drives that group, but also sometimes creates a tension that has to be addressed.
Draymond was the biggest surprise for me because I had not been covering the league day to day, and I thought I was going to go to Golden State and spend the season looking around there, and I was going to find under the surface that despite all the things they say about Draymond's importance, that the knucklehead factor was just going to be too strong. And I was going to get there and go, eh, we're, you know, we really don't, you know, Draymond, if we could get rid of him, that's what I thought. I was totally wrong. That the importance of Draymond to that team, you know, from the very first day, I kept looking for – now, he's key. I'm not going to say they're not going to trade, you know, they're not going to trade Steph before him. They're not going to trade KD before him. But that guy, in terms of importance to that team, is way, way, way higher. And he does walk the line. Now, this is where Steve Kerr comes in again. One of the things he does – and I don't know whether this is overblown or not, but David West, who I'm sure you know, is one of the most respected, smartest guys I've ever come across. Well, I asked the typical, you know, cliche question about Steve said, you kind of have Draymond's back. It's a real thing. I mean, it's a very real thing about a leadership aspect. And one of the things David West did on that team, besides come in, not turn over the ball, make some, jump shots from the key, do some rebounding, play people tough, was kind of work on Draymond a little bit. And Kerr is very, very